When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today on the Blocking Chargecast, the Big Ten crowns its tournament champion. The selection committee pulls off a series of epic pranks, bro, on various Big Ten teams. We consider if there are really any big dance ticket shit-a-hatters when 68 teams already make the field, and figure out who needs what to be happy. LOL, just kidding, we're going to speak nightmares into existence for every team in the field. But it doesn't even take much imagination with the Lovecraftian minds that crafted this bracket this week on the Blocking Chargecast. Welcome to the Big Ten recap slash March Madness preview on the Blocking Chargecast, your source for Big Ten basketball, where the rest of the country is insisting that we're pretty good, and none of us, with the possible exception of Iowa fans, actually agree.
Yeah, so I just wanted to make a little announcement here. You know, these past 2 weeks, I've realized that my place is still on the podcast and not on vacation in the tropics where it's warm. That time will come, but it's not now. I love my podcast mates and I love my supportive blog colleagues. They make it all possible. I'm coming back for my fourth season of the Blocking Chargecast next season, Unfinished Business, LFG. That, of course, being me, Andrew Krzyzewski, your normal host, returning from my honeymoon and paraphrasing Tampa Tom, who could not stand somebody talking about something other than him for a day. And so like 20 minutes after the bracket was announced, right, he fires off this tweet that he's coming back, which least surprising thing ever. Everyone knew that they'd make this big announcement out of it. Totally unnecessary. But anyway.
Well, the first reason that I knew was because Rappaport was the first to break the story. And I remember when he said on draft day, there is not a chance in hell Aaron Rodgers plays for the Packers in 2021. It's not happening. Book it. The trade is imminent. But I know one thing. He might host Jeopardy. He might do all manner of things. But the only thing he will not do is play for the Packers in 2021. So when that guy says, Tom Brady's retiring. I said, hell, he is.
No, he's not. And so that is the voice, of course, of Steve Braun, our stalwart host who carried us over in my neglectful absence. We are joined also by Buff Komodo, our Indiana correspondent. A little bit of sweat still present on the brow with the way the bracket unfolded, but ultimately Indiana in the field as they should have been.
It feels like being an Illinois fan, every question that I try to, you know, that I try to lob past him is just going to bounce on the rim and then bounce like 15 feet in the air a bunch of times and then bounce out.
Yeah, and then you miss the back end of your free throws and have to hope you don't hit a full court shot.
Oh, boy. So anyway, let's start by recapping the Big Ten tournament because, well, as soon as I realized what had happened it wasn't even when I realized that Iowa was going to the final. It was when I realized that Illinois was powerless to prevent Iowa from going to the final that I decided this is going to be a work on the living room weekend. So yeah. I didn't watch any of the games after Friday. Although in the games I watched on Friday, I did notice, my goodness, the rims are the bounciest I've ever seen. I do think that played a lot into it in that for Illinois and Wisconsin, they were playing teams that had played there the previous day. I guess maybe they just didn't get enough in warmups, but like, man, it was incredible to see just miss layup after layup and dunk after dunk. So anyway, moving on from that, Jordan Bohannon finally decided to show up.
Yeah, after mostly a terrible year here in this sort of super senior season that he's taking, well below his career, I think something like 8 to 10 points below his career averages from the floor and from three, which are kind of the same things. Threes are basically all he takes. But man, in this Big Ten tournament, he came up absolutely nails. Keegan Murray continued to be his heroic self for Iowa. They, of course, if you haven't picked up yet, ended up winning the thing a little bit earlier today. Their first tournament title since 2006, I believe their third overall. Of course, the mid-2000s, an era of Iowa basketball that all of their fans that hold deeply close to their heart, love to remember those days and just the upstanding moral character of their institution and the man they chose to lead it for that period of time. So it's very good that Iowa fans are able to think back proudly to the mid-2000s once again.
Jordan Bohannon, I mean, good for him for winning something. He's been around so long that he's actually beaten Illinois. Like, he's been around that long that he was on an Iowa team that beat Illinois.
Long. And so, again, having been gone for most of the past 2 weeks, the final was actually the only game of the Big Ten tournament that I saw live. And boy, did I have a familiar feeling watching Purdue play, because in terms of their ball security, they were very much channeling my own team in their worst moments. I think they ended up with 17 turnovers, something like that. And this was kind of the downside of the way Jaden Ivey plays sometimes, where, yes, the pressing the secondary break draws a lot of fouls, creates a lot of havoc, but it also results in a lot of turnovers. And it, against a team like Iowa that has the capacity of going point for point with you, I wonder if they would have been better off telling him to pump the brakes a little bit. Iowa did not really have good defensive matchups for Edey or for Williams inside. They were playing deep reserves like Ogundole and Mulvey, guys who had barely played all season. And that Purdue wasn't more deliberate about attacking the interior, I thought was a really weird choice. And again, as I playfully commented this as I started to come back into the world of Wi-Fi and could at least communicate a little bit with the Slack and all of our authors, as kind of mentioned, oh, yeah, you know, look at that. A lot of the other, you know, the Big Ten tournament's usually a very chalky event, right? The top seeds very commonly win it, the advantage of the extra rest. But this year, more than any season I remember, I mean, there was a bloodbath at the top of the bracket. By the end of the day, Friday, Illinois, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Rutgers, four of the top five seeds, I believe, if I remember correctly.
Four of the top six. Iowa was the five.
Iowa was the five, yes.
But three of the top four.
Yeah. Yeah, and Ohio State was down even before play began Friday.
And Penn State was right there with Purdue near the end of that game until Ivy made just a spectacularly athletic steal and drive and dunk. But I thought... Yeah. You know, by that late game on Friday, I was thinking, oh, my God. I mean, Penn State's got to be the team of destiny, because wouldn't that sum up this year's Big Ten if Penn State made the run from the 11 and won it all? Yeah.
Or even just made, like, the semifinal, because it's that much of a chalk event that I used to know this off the top of my head. I don't think anybody lower than, like, the 7 has ever even made a semifinal. I might be making that up, but there was some figure like that, where the Big Ten tournament is very much, not quite like the West Coast or the WCC's tournament that basically says Gonzaga gets a bye to the final, but usually a very chalky event. We had kind of different teams involved than we usually do. But notwithstanding the fact that there were upsets, most of the games were close. All of them in the quarterfinals were within 10 points. Both of the semifinal matches were within 5. The title game opened up to a little bit more of a margin, but that's mostly because Purdue had to foul late and Iowa kept hitting their foul shots. It was a very competitive game, though, notwithstanding the fact that Bo Borowski did his absolute best to wreck its momentum. God, that guy is quickly entering Hightower territory.
Oh, Andrew, you are, in fact, incorrect. 10 seed Illinois back in my freshman year went all the way to the damn finals.
Okay. I told you I was making it up.
But I think Penn State might have gone as far as any Wednesday team has ever gone.
There was that run a couple years ago by Nebraska in the last Tim Miles year, but I think they only actually made the quarterfinals. It just felt like a deep run because they had started on Wednesday. But yeah, again, very uncommon. And it's not like we had Northwestern, Nebraska crashing the semis or something. We're talking like teams in the middle of the pack, but even that is pretty unusual.
So an observation that one of the Illinois reporters I follow had is Jaden Ivey hits the floor more than any player I've seen in college basketball this year. This is an Illinois reporter, bear in mind, one that watches Andre Curbelo play. Andre Curbelo is in the student section after every play or on top of a cheerleader.
Yeah. And I guess that's kind of maybe the reason why he has these turnovers sometimes, where he has a little bit of a tendency to leave the ground, to jump without having a clear idea of what he's going to do. And a lot of the times that results in creative and fantastic plays. And then other times he's just kind of hanging in midair and his defender's in good position and nobody's open. So he either throws it away or chucks up a bad shot.
Yeah, with my Rocket League skill level, that's very relatable.
Yeah, right.
Just, I just end up in the air just being like, oh no, I shouldn't be in the air right now. I'm way up in the air. Oh, no.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, this is historically not an event that has been all that great for Indiana. And since we have an Indiana writer taking the time to join us, we'll pitch to this perspective for a second and kind of riff for a second. Were you encouraged at all, Buff, by the improved performance from Woodson in this event and also in making the field and his first year, mostly with Archie Miller's last team that couldn't do so last season? Or is it sort of a small sample size waiting to see before you draw conclusions kind of thing?
I think that had Indiana come out and not made the tournament this year, I think that that would have been a very, very dour note for the start of the Woodson era, mostly because this team is so old and so talented. And to kind of frame up where my mindset was on Thursday, I started writing my Indiana autopsy at halftime of the Michigan game. And I can tell you that it was not very kind.
To be fair.
Yeah.
And I got most of the way through it, and then they started to come back. And so that thing is still saved. I'm just going to continue to the end after that and just put like a little exclaimer saying, this was all before this. This was all after.
Yeah.
Because it was a comeback for the ages, and Michigan just completely stopped being able to make shots in Indiana's. Indiana got what we like to call the John Gross Invitational, where you play in the early game on Thursday, usually against Michigan.
Oh, yeah. My entire life, the Big Ten tournament has just been show up, take your ass whoop, and go home. And for Indiana actually to put up a fight this time. And what was it? This is the first time since like 2003 where they'd won multiple games in the Big Ten tournament.
I believe so, yeah.
Or was it 2006? 2003 or 2006? And they got to the semis for the first time since 2003 or 2002. One or the other. It's been a while.
And it was just very encouraging. Yeah, what is your thought process on that historical struggle? Is it just kind of the pressure of playing in a big venue in your home state, which would be kind of weird considering the pomp and circumstance around Indiana? Like, is there anything to it, or is it just kind of still a small enough sample size that it's just kind of one of those things?
I think that when did the Big Ten tournament start? Wasn't it 96, 97?
Thereabouts.
That sounds about right.
So you had about 4 years of night. I think that every subsequent coach has not been necessarily a good postseason coach. And I think those exist because you can tell just by the track record. I mean, even in the NCAA tournament, like the best team that Indiana has had since 1993 got beat by a Syracuse zone in a 2-3. They completely collapsed that year. And it's just, Indiana fails to have a coach that can actually get his team motivated enough to play in that tournament. And they fail to get the guys that actually want to go out and play in that said tournament.
Well, it's also a matter of having a tactician that can get the most out of a team like that in a single game, in a postseason, in a single elimination game, to be able to make adjustments, to be able to get the most out of the talent. I feel like that's not what Indiana's had until now.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't want to anoint Mike Woods as the next, whatever.
For sure. But there's a difference between somebody that's going to just run into the Syracuse 2-3 zone. First off, somehow be unprepared for it. And second, do nothing to adjust.
Syracuse 2-3 zone after a week of practice.
Hey man, look, I know that feel. Boy, do I ever. So the Big Ten tournament, first year it was played was 1998. And yeah, to your point, I think that there's probably some truth to that, and that having a good tactical coach with a short turnaround and the lack of time to prepare is probably important, because I think between the two of them, 1998, so not quite half of the Big Ten tournaments have been won by Tom Izzo and Thad Matta combined. Izzo has six of them, and I think Matta had five.
I feel like John Beilein won several.
He won only two, actually. They were just back to back. So it's, 17 and 18. It just feels like, because I think they made the final in 2019, but we beat them. So, and they actually beat them. We beat them in the final twice in the last decade, in 2014 and 2019. And then Michigan won in 17 and 18. So they were in the finals one, two, three, four out of 6 years before the pandemic. Yeah, that was definitely an event that John Beilein did in very well in as well, which again, kind of goes to the point. So anyway,
and there's been large stretches where Indiana has just been not good too in the time that the tournaments existed, from like 2004 to 2010. Like they were Nebraska, like no offense to Nebraska people, but like
Samson. And then in the aftermath of Samson, there were definitely a few years where, they lost early because they were bad, and we had to play on Wednesday and everything. So,
and that last Samson year, Samson got dismissed right before the tournament. They had to finish with Dokic as the interim. So, I mean, every single year, it almost seems like there's something that trips up Indiana at the end of the year where this kind of fall to the finish line. You know, that 2013 team included, whatever they had to rely on. I can't remember who missed the layup at Michigan to miss a point blank layup to win a Big Ten title. So
can I just say, I am shocked that, given how much the NCAA selection committee likes to play pranks on the Big Ten, that they didn't put Houston at the five opposite the Wyoming Indiana play-in game. I can't believe that's a huge missed opportunity.
That would have been so awesome.
I literally can't believe because they were a five seed.
Can't make it too obvious, because then the other thing they could have done would have been to make Auburn the two in Illinois region.
I literally can't believe we didn't get the Kansas Auburn one.
Yeah, and there will be, like I said, there'll all in due time. Like you don't want to fire all of your bullets in one. See, like these plot lines will be there. They're not going anywhere.
Well, I mean, because we have only made the tournament twice since the time they made us play one of our former head coaches and then another former head coach. We played two former head coaches in two games.
Got to give the broadcasters and the casuals something to latch onto if they're not interested in the actual game. All this is to say that fine effort by Iowa to win the tournament. Boy, think about this, that going into this season, I had basically come to my conclusion about Fran McCaffrey that apparently Iowa fans were satisfied with him. Easy to understand, because not a ton of basketball pedigree in that program. I know there's some, I'm saying like not a blue blood or a semi blue blood by any means, but they play an entertaining brand of basketball. And man, after he had two All-American caliber seasons from Luka Garza, Garza came back as a senior when he probably had nothing left to prove after that incredible junior year. They still didn't win anything with him. I mean, they won a fair number of games, but like a single tournament win, no Big Ten tournaments, no Big Ten regular seasons, didn't make it to the second weekend. I was just like, man, you have a player the caliber of Luka Garza and you don't put anything in the rafters other than his jersey for that run. I had concluded that that's as good as it's ever going to get. And then this next season, they turned things around, and Murray showed some signs last year of being good. He did not show signs of being this. Of being a guy who rewrote all of Garza's individual season records, at least in the context of the Big Ten tournament, by all means has them being, because when you think about teams that could make runs in the NCAA tournament, you've got to have that guy who's the go-to scorer. You usually want it to be your lead guard, but man, I don't know. Most teams are not going to have a guy who can guard Keegan Murray. And that Fran developed him into that in the course of a single off season, he goes from being a useful role player to an absolute superstar at just absolutely fantastic job of development by that staff. And then kind of one note earlier. So we didn't really touch too much on the first couple of days of the tournament, but Ohio State lost in their first game in the Big Ten tournament again. this continues what is now becoming, I mean, there's enough of a body of evidence that this is kind of a trend of Chris Holtmann's Ohio State teams biting the dust very early in postseason competition. And because they lost in their first game in the Big Ten tournament, and you know, a lot of fans are willing to kind of hand wave and say, oh, well, you know, whatever, it's Big Ten tournament. If we weren't going to win the whole thing, I'd rather lose right away and give our guys time to rest. Yeah, because you want your team to have a whole week off and get rusty at the end of the season, I guess. But anyway, I just wonder if Ohio State got a hell of a draw, and we're going to go team by team in just a moment, but I can't help but wonder if yet another early postseason exit is going to change the perspective of Ohio State fans that are still in Chris Holtmann's corner. It's an interesting conversation to have because he's constructing high quality teams, but they get in the postseason and boy, things break down in a hurry. So
I'll tell you what though, that thing that you say about, you know, the early Big Ten exit, well, if we're not going to win at all, then, you know, get rested for the tournament. That is pure copium and nothing else because, you know, I heard the same thing. It's like, well, hey, you know what? We already won it last year. So, you know, we get some more rest. It's like, what? Like we weren't rested going into this tournament? We hadn't played since Sunday. We were plenty rested. Like, I'd rather we have a data point that makes us feel really good and confident about ourselves instead of losing as the one seed in the first game. I mean, what? Like, I don't think that the problem was Alphonso Plummer didn't rest enough.
Right. Yeah.
A lot of these dudes come off the AAU circuit too, where they're playing 2-3 games a day for like 3 or 4 days in the summer. Like you can't play back to back games like 3 days. Like that's,
yeah, you know, you
that's
can.
A major, it's pure cop out.
It's pure copium by fans wanting to rationalize it and feel good heading into the tournament when they've done something embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like allow Iowa the ability to advance. I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about us.
I would believe by the time of the semifinals or the finals that maybe a bad performance would be explained by fatigue if you've played 3 days in a row or 4. But yeah, I think for the most part that yes, fans of most teams are willing to dismiss the Big Ten tournament because it has been dominated by a relatively small number of teams in the conference. So anyway, the Holtmann point was really the last thing I wanted to do to put a pin in the conference tournament. I always feel like the fact that they go from the end of the Big Ten tournament straight into the selection is a big part of what diminishes the significance of that event because there's no time at all to soak in what usually produces some pretty good basketball, which I think is unfortunate because it's kind of like it would be a nice capper to a conference season if the conference tournaments were allowed a little more time to marinate. I almost wonder if they might be better off pushing the selection like a day later, but I understand you want to do it on a Sunday when you get more eyeballs. Anyway.
Well, you know, it's kind of like when, if you have like the NFL draft and then like immediately after the last pick of round one, Tom Brady announces that he's unretiring. And then at the end of the second round, he announces he's retiring again. And it's like, okay, nope. Now there's going to be no sports media talking about what actually happened.
Yeah. And it's just, from that perspective, it's a little strange because I would expect that the networks are probably paying a decent amount of money to broadcast those conference tournaments. Don't they want to get a little more play out of that piece of property? But, you know, whatever. What do I know? So we will now proceed into quick rundown of the Big Ten teams that made the tournament. We had a total of 9, another big year in terms of teams in the field. But man, there are some difficult rows to hoe. So we'll start. We'll kind of go in the same order they did on the selection show to keep things simple. West Region, the number one overall team, Gonzaga. In this region, you have Rutgers as a play-in game, an 11 seed with a matchup against Notre Dame. Were they to prevail in that game, they would play Alabama as the 6. And then if they win that game, they would need to beat the winner of Texas Tech and Montana State. So that's the little subpod for Rutgers. Notre Dame, arguably the weakest at-large team included in the field. Not quite the resume of a Texas A&M, for example. One of our colleagues in the Slack elaborated on that considerably. That would be kind of is what his moniker, not the most easily to refer to things. But anyway,
one of my favorite screen names, the full, of yeah. course, being kind of, but not really.
Yeah. So just quick points on Notre Dame's resume. Only 3 wins over teams in the tournament field. One of those was over Kentucky, which is impressive. But for example, I think most people are referring to Texas A&M as kind of the team that has the biggest right to complain about being subbed. And again, as we pointed out in the intro, 68 teams in the field, man. How many do you really want to let in? Somebody is always going to be the first team left out. But Texas A&M beat Auburn, and they beat Arkansas twice. Notre Dame's only other tournament wins were over North Carolina, which is an 8 seed, and Miami, which is a 10. ACC was down again this year. Notre Dame making the tournament for the first time since 2016 or 17, I believe. That you would think, even not being played at the rack, is probably a game that Rutgers can win. Alabama's going to be
that was when Illinois was kind of playing their worst and had just gotten walloped by Cincinnati, barely scraped by K-State. Notre Dame was the first game that we played that made us feel good about ourselves after that. It was like, oh, okay. Well, we can handle these guys.
Yeah, and that's back. Curbelo's still injured at that point. Colburn had missed the first couple games. There might have been a little bit of an adjustment period. But anyway, Notre Dame, a very winnable game in that play-in for Rutgers. Alabama's much more of a challenge, but they're also – they're one of those teams where when they're up, they can beat anybody, and if they're off, they can lose to anybody.
Well, basically, if they can get past – the winner of that game, they could go all the way to the Final Four. The problem is they're really bad against teams that like kind of suck, and they're really good against teams that are really good. They lost to Georgia. Like Tom Crean, Georgia was terrible this year.
Yeah, Anthony Edwards wasn't walking through that door, nor were like their 8 best players from last year. So losing to a 2022 vintage Creams, not the best look. I have to admit, the way this roller coaster season has gone, I'm doodling Nate Oates' name on my notebook a little bit less as my top replacement for Tom Izzo. Before this year, he had been kind of rethinking that a little bit. But anyway.
Well, he also beat Gonzaga.
Yes, right. And so that's the thing is it, there are some high highs, but.
And also Baylor.
Yeah, no, their resume is bananas. Because like you said, the teams they beat, it's as good a resume in terms of quality wins as anyone in the country, but they lost enough games that they fell all the way to the 6th line. So what are you going to do? Elsewhere in the West region, my Michigan State Spartans cast as the 7 seed against, 10 seed Davidson. That's, a team with a little bit of tournament history. Everyone will remember Steph Curry. Nothing interesting to see here. Moving right along. Oh, wait, hang on. I wonder.
Good Davidson squad too.
Yeah, they're good. They won the Atlantic 10 this year. Didn't win the conference tournament, but they won the regular season, I think, by a couple of games. Bushkamoto, as more of a casual fan, not involved here with Michigan State, does the name Foster Lawyer mean anything to you?
It does not. Foster's is usually something we put on bananas. It's like the Captain and Coke that you light on fire. But
oh yeah, Bananas Foster's great. So Foster Lawyer spent 3 years playing for Michigan State. Transferred this year to Davidson. He did not play much for Michigan State if it could be avoided. And when he did play, he was mostly terrible. He's undersized, under athletic. Basically what had happened was Tom Izzo accepted his commitment when he was in like 10th grade because the kid basically looked like a young version of Steph Curry. He had incredible handles, he could shoot from anywhere. And the thought was, man, when this kid grows a few inches, he's going to be a dominant Division I point guard. And then he didn't. So if he's 6 foot tall, I think that's probably being generous. He really struggled. He was a big part. A part of the reason why MSU was so terrible at the point after Cassius Winston. He transferred last offseason, went to Davidson. For them, he starts, he plays 30 minutes a game. He scores like 15 or 16 points, and he shoots 45% from 3 this season. And now we get to play him in the first round. And remember, he spent 3 years at Michigan State, and Tom Izzo never changes his systems. So that's who we play in the first round.
Got pranked, bro.
Oh, we sure did. That'll teach us. It seems
this doesn't look good for you.
Well, you know, it seems like most Michigan State fans are confident because it is true. He was terrible defensively. And either of Michigan State's point guards ought to be able to score 20 to 30 points on him. But we sometimes have a tendency to lose track of shooters. And he is absolutely the kind of guy who can go 7 for 9 from deep on you if you don't pay attention to him.
I remember feeling the same way about Mark Smith when he went to Missouri.
Right. And
he sucked out loud and they still beat us.
I don't think it was as acrimonious a split as that may have been behind the scenes, but still, it's one of those things where everyone's like, oh yeah, man, we get to beat up Foster. I'm like, are you sure? Because he's doing a lot better this year than he ever did for us.
Well, as far as Big Ten versus former team games are concerned, you already have the Trent laying down some sick butt tricks against Penn State. So I don't know if there have been any other. We beat Mark Smith, who plays for Kansas State now. So I guess the ones that I know about are 1-1. But I mainly loved Foster Lawyer for the times that he was on the floor with Justice Suing. Because you had Lawyer and Suing going
pretty infrequent, I think. And certainly if Suing ever ended up matched up with him, that would be what we would call a mismatch.
The Lawyer suing for justice.
Oh, yeah. And then just minor detail, if they do get past Davidson, which I expect they will, even with my negative Nancy worst nightmare scenario existing where he goes off for 30 and that would put that game would be right in the pantheon with Middle Tennessee State and Syracuse as just the worst losses of the Tom Izzo era. I don't think it's going to happen. It is a possibility that has to be acknowledged. But even if they do win, who's the 2 seed in that region? Well, that would be Duke. That would be a Duke with a Mark Williams who would get to face off against Michigan State's front court. And it would be a Duke with a legendary coach in his last season who already kind of gets every call that he wants. So
it is an opportunity, though.
But that coach is sputtering to the finish line there, though. Don't forget that.
And don't get me wrong. I would recant every bad thing I've said about Tom Izzo this season if he knocks Coach K's career into oblivion and gets to, even if we could lose by 40 in the Sweet 16, if we put the final bullet in Coach K's career, I'll consider this season acceptable. Not a success, but I won't gripe about it the way that I do about most seasons.
If they can get past a 15 seed, which they haven't always done.
That's true. Duke does have to beat Cal State Fullerton, but in the cut, look.
That would be amazing.
But given how often Duke is a 1 or a 2 seed, yeah, okay, they are not always going to win that. So.
There's nothing like playing Duke on a big stage because your team becomes the most popular team in America.
That's true. The hearts and souls, the spirit bomb energy of the nation will go towards Cal State Fullerton on that day. That is true. So those are the only two Big Ten teams in the West. I believe Wade is set. Let me confirm this really quick. No, Rutgers and Michigan State could meet before the Sweet 16, or before the Final Four, rather. So to complete this thought that I'm stumbling my way through here, Michigan State and Rutgers are in the same half of the same region. So if they were to meet, it would be in the Sweet 16 if they both make it that far. I'm not optimistic about Michigan State's chances. Rutgers, it'll depend on the quality of the hoops in the gym. If people's open shots go in, Rutgers is going to lose. If the rims are a little tighter, like they are in a certain building Rutgers plays in, Scarlet Knights could beat anybody.
It also very much depends on what officiating crews are there.
Oh,
does it not?
I don't know. Maybe this is something that should be dug into a little deeper, but I know that our Iowa colleague Stu is of the opinion that because sometimes Big Ten officials have a tendency to allow more contact than, you know, they could perhaps call more, that we as a conference are at a disadvantage in the tournament. I don't know that I've ever noticed that to be the case, with maybe a couple of exceptions. I don't know that massive foul trouble has really been the death knell of Michigan State's efforts in the past.
Well, it could very well be a problem for his team, but you know, if that is truly the case, I'm looking forward to a game where they call every foul committed against Kofi Coburn and Zach Edey.
Oh yeah, for sure. Because I mean,
my theory on why teams tended to lose immediately after beating Illinois, which was true in the Big Ten tournament as well, is that their arms are all tired from slapping Kofi in the chest repeatedly.
So that does lead us to a decent segue point. We'll move now to the South region, where your team was the first to be slotted into their spots.
Well, I mean, as far as pranks go, like, you know, in the Illini fandom have, you know, it's a fairly infamous 1997 tournament loss to 14 seed Chattanooga. So it's like, ha ha, I get that reference. That's a bit of a deep cut, considering that you had 13 seed Akron with former Illini head coach John Gross sitting right there. Right. I mean, you know, the Chattanooga is a bit of a deeper cut, but I still get it, guys. You got me. You know, and then as far as I'm evaluating this purely as the quality of the prank, because then the Houston is the 5 seed, despite being number 3 in the net, number 5 in Sagarin's rankings. And, you know, I guess the angle there is, Kelvin Sampson, flipping a signed Eric Gordon away was kind of the beginning of the end for that era of great Illini basketball in the early aughts. You know, it feels like they're a bit wasted given that Indiana is going to play in for a 12 seed and you could have had Houston waiting for them. Yeah, but, you know, overall, I guess I give it like a C plus on the prank.
It's a whoopee cushion. It's not something people are going to remember beyond when it happens, but in the moment, yeah, decent.
Like Loyola being in the region is like kind of funny, except they're on the opposite side and we're not getting back to Arizona. As far as actually our chances, I certainly like our chances against Chattanooga, not as much as I would have liked our chances against Akron, because I think Trenton DeMonte can definitely defend high ball screen, high ball screen, high ball screen contested three, which is John Gross's offense.
Yeah.
But Chattanooga does not scare me too much. I would really like Vermont was the one I was very scared of as 13 seeds go, because they just dominated their tournament.
Right. The highest quality of the 13s, I think, would have been Vermont. Elsewhere in the region, probably the most generous overseeding and the easiest early path of any Big Ten team would be who else? But Michigan, seeded in not as a play-in 11, but just as a straight 11. They see Colorado State as their 6th. That's a very winnable game for a team with Michigan's talent. And then they get to play a Rick Barnes coach team. And he's been better at Tennessee than he was at Texas in the
Rick Barnes. That doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. We're in the postseason now.
Right.
Hasn't Rick Barnes lost at – there's some record about him in the tournament. Like, he was the first to lose as, like – every seed is
like
that
it is like a 1, a 2, a 3, and a 4 or something like that. I've heard something like that, and again, this is like the fourth time on this broadcast when I'm like, oh yeah, you know, that's definitely a fact that I know. I've heard that, and I think of those so far, none of them have actually been true, but I do have a vague sense of knowing what we're talking about. It is also possible that first time tournament participant Longwood could take down Tennessee in the first round. It seems unlikely, but we've seen more and more frequently now these kind of 13s and 14s cracking through a little more frequently than they used to. It's not just something for the 12s upsetting the 5s.
Okay, I misstated that. It's who he's been eliminated by. As of last year, he's been eliminated by a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and last year he was eliminated by a 12 seed. So he's got a 14 seed on the docket. If he did this, that would leave him with just 3 more to get bingo, which of course includes the hardest ones.
The hard ones. But Tennessee's been a pretty strong regular season program, so they may have more opportunities at those 15-2 and 16-1 events occurring. So, yeah, we mentioned Michigan, certainly a talent advantage over Colorado State. I think Tennessee would match them athletically, but in terms of coaching, I think I would take Juwan and the Juwan Phil Martelli brain trust over what Rick Barnes is bringing to the table. They do have other interesting teams in their portion of the bracket. For example, the third Big Ten team in this region, Ohio State, they being the 7th seed, have a first round matchup with Drew Valentine's Loyola Chicago team. A team that had some experience against the Big Ten last year, not carrying over all the same guys, but still.
Well, look, honestly, when we're talking about It's kind of what I said last year. It's like everybody was viewing, you know, Illinois as the heavy favorite in the context, you know, and Loyola as the big underdog. And it's like, well, look at what those programs have done in the tournament recently. Loyola made a Final Four. Illinois hadn't made one in 8 years. So really, Ohio State is staring down the barrel of a tank gun right now, because Loyola Chicago is a team that makes runs in the tournament.
Yeah, pretty much.
Ohio State is very much not.
So, Buff, I feel like we're excluding you here. I have, again, a lot to say, having watched basically no basketball over the last 2 weeks. Looking at this South region, do you project chalk? I know, I mean, in the first bracket I went through, I have Villanova beating Arizona, the one in the regional final. How do you see this region shaking out for the three Big Ten teams clustered in there?
For the three Big Ten teams? I don't really like any of these matchups for them. I think that Villanova is, no matter what happens to Ohio State, I think Villanova is just so much better than them. And to that matter, I think that Tennessee is going to go to the Final Four. I don't trust an Arizona team, mostly because they're a Pac-12 team, but one always makes the Final Four, so I'll probably get that wrong. Illinois just revolves so heavily around Kofi Coburn that I'm not comfortable saying that they're going to make it past the Sweet 16.
I would say that there's an off chance. So if Houston were still at full health, I would be a lot more amenable to that. I have them losing to Arizona in the Sweet 16. So first of all, the teams did already play this year. I mean, Thump, what do you think relative to where the team was when that first matchup happened? Would you feel better or worse about a matchup with Arizona now?
I really don't know, because that was kind of the prelude to the part of the season where Illinois was just kicking everybody's ass. And the last month of the season has not been that. The X factor is, how good is Andre Curbelo? Yeah. Although he was very bad at making shots, he was very good against Indiana. He got double-digit rebounds. He made one of the best passes I've ever seen to Coleman Hawkins, who just left it there on the front of the rim for some reason. But it's going to depend a lot on that. And if, you know, I'm just assuming that Alphonso Plummer, who's our best three-point shooter, is not going to just continue to be unable to shoot them. So Plummer was great in that game. I can't remember what the key play was in that game, because we were right there with him until the end. It was very stupid, though. Like, it was a very stupid thing on which we lost the opportunity to win that game. We lost by four, but it was kind of one of those things where it's like, okay, well, now we have to foul.
Yeah, so then the margin.
I don't necessarily know that I think it's impossible that we beat Arizona, because, you know, it could have happened. Granted, it was at home. It was a sold-out State Farm Center, but, you know, the problem that I have with Arizona is that they did have the size to match up with Coburn, and the only other team that can say that has been Purdue, and we did not beat them.
All right,
it's been my opinion too, and I think this is something that hurts Big Ten teams as a whole. I think Big Ten teams are really good, but more often than not, they rely on their big men, and whenever you get into tournament scenarios, you have to have ball dominant players that can play inside and out. And over the past 20 years, since the Big Ten last won their title, you know, the teams with the best guards have the most success in the tournament, with your Trey Burke Michigans, with your Tom Coverdale Indiana Hoosiers back then. Shabazz Napier, Kemba Walker, you name it, up and down. Jalen Suggs getting into the finals last year, Johnny Juzang getting into the Final Four. Like, the Big Ten, I don't know any of the guards by name, because whenever you looked at the ESPN's release of like all the Wooden Award like watch lists for the Big Ten, they were all big dudes. That doesn't bode well. It really doesn't.
Big dudes, and ironically, Jaden Ivey, who I think sometimes gets lost in the sauce a little bit, because
yeah, that's true too.
Has the comically giant guy, and that's what most people know about them. But
he has a tendency to run and hide though. The last you know, both Indiana games, he was MIA for the most part.
Yeah. I think that this is a point where Stu Monkey's thought about officiating actually holds some water, in that I tend to think that big men are much more affected by the way games are officiated than guards are. I mean, for the most part, even across, like, regardless of the conference or the postseason or whatever, hand checking tends to be called roughly the same. Occasionally they'll catch a guard off, you know, off guard, not to put too much of a pun out there, but there can be bigger differences in what is allowed for contact on the inside. If a big guy is used to getting calls on most contact and then he gets to the tournament and a ref is letting everything go or vice versa, I think that throws a big guy off his game a lot more than a guard, where, you know, you kind of expect to have had more experience with hand checking regardless. So I wonder if that's, yeah, I think you may be onto something that kind of connects to an earlier point. We talked about that.
It was always a 5 seconds closely guarded. That was where we lost it. Down three, Plummer got a 5 seconds closely guarded violation.
Okay, yeah, that is truly absurd. Yeah, I forget your exact phrasing, but that's a wild one.
I remember it being a super obscure and preposterous way to lose, because after that we had to foul.
Yeah, where you hear the call and the booth is like, wait, what's going on? Oh yeah, hold on. So that's this rule. And you're like, wait, what? That's a rule? And then you go and it's like, yeah, it sure is. I mean, they never call it.
We basically we got a Lions loss. A Detroit Lions loss.
Yeah, where it's like, okay, the ref comes out and basically just like talks to the audience. He's like, okay, y'all are not going to believe this, but, and then he goes into like the explanation about why your team has lost. Yeah, that's the Lions thing. Okay, so we'll get this moving. We're running a little bit long here into the Midwest region, where Kansas is the number one seed, two Big Ten teams. Iowa at the 5 sees Richmond, winner of the Atlantic 10 tournament, probably would not have been in the dance otherwise. So in terms of matchup, that's probably one of the more favorable ones you could get as Iowa. If they prevail over the Spiders, they would have the winner of Providence versus South Dakota State. That's doable. South Dakota State went on a long run in a pretty bad conference. They haven't lost since like December, I think. But given that it's a pretty weak conference, you know, what does that mean necessarily? It's hard to say.
I'll tell you what, if I didn't hate Iowa and thought, you know, and want them to lose as immediately as possible, I would really enjoy an Iowa-South Dakota State game, because South Dakota State, to an even greater degree than Iowa, does not believe in playing defense. And yeah. Scores like their over unders regularly hit like 160. And Providence, of course, it's a 5 there, and they're Big East Wisconsin,
right? So at least a style that Iowa's familiar with. So that's their chunk of the bracket again. Richmond in the first round, if they advance there, the winner of Providence and South Dakota State. They would most likely get Kansas in the Sweet 16, but the 8-9 matchup there is Creighton and San Diego State. So those are other possibilities for Iowa if there should be an upset earlier there. Bottom half of the Midwest, where we've got Wisconsin, they being the 3, get Colgate in the first round. I can't say I know anything about them this year, but they are a team that makes the tournament fairly regularly. They've got a decent track record of success. And should Wisconsin prevail there, they will get the winner of maybe one of the more interesting first round games. We've got the 11 seed Iowa State, which went from being abjectly terrible last year to a, you know, reasonably safe tournament team this year. And the 6 seed is LSU, which fired their coach today after receiving notice of allegations, including 5 counts of lack of institutional control between the basketball and football programs. Go Tigers.
Yeah, my goodness. You know, my favorite thing is that they cited the dreaded lack of institutional control as Brian Kelly took that job.
Exactly. Yeah. And you pointed that out and I responded, you know, only reasonable conclusion here is to fire Brian Kelly with cause immediately.
Brian Kelly has more kills than national championships. Just saying.
That is, many people forget that.
Oh, people forget that.
He, you know what? That would still be true if he won a national title.
Right. He'd need another one to even tie the ledger. So it's an interesting region. I can't pretend that I know anything about Colgate. They haven't exactly been a regular feature on Super Tuesday or what have you. Iowa State, I mean, that's one of the non-conference games I recall best, is That was when I thought that Iowa was actually just a one-man show and was going to be pretty bad. Was when Iowa State shut down Keegan Murray and they really had nothing else available. They got much better at dealing with that over the course of the season. And then in terms of LSU, I mean, again, they always have the talent, but how does a team respond to their head coach being fired? How much was that head coach really bringing to the table on the court? It could be one of those things where it's us against the world and they run to the Final Four, or they have even less structure and discipline than they usually do when they're out in the first round losing by 30.
Colgate absolutely dominated the Patriot League for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, and it's, again, it's usually it's a low major conference, to be sure. But Colgate's been a perennial power in that league for quite a while. They're fairly regular tournament appearance, but usually in about this seed range, and I don't recall them ever pulling an upset, at least not in recent history. So again, we mentioned the one seed in this region is Kansas, but of more immediate concern to Wisconsin would be the two seed Auburn, which would be, again, certainly a contrast of styles. I think that's probably the team you're going to see come out of the bottom of the bracket. Other teams down there, USC, Miami, Jacksonville State. Auburn feels like a pretty safe route to the Sweet 16. So that's what Wisconsin would most likely see if they get that far.
God damn it. You're going to make me root for goddamn Wisconsin.
I'm going to root for the building to collapse if that particular outcome happens.
Somebody, Auburn must be stopped. Now, going back to Iowa, I think there's some very interesting comparisons to be made because, like, I recall that also last year there was a Big Ten team that got hotter than hell in February and March, won the Big Ten tournament behind, you know, just a superstar with a, you know, with a little bit of length, maybe a guard forward type of guy that was averaging 20 a game. It was an All-American, you know, and seemed like everybody had him to go to the Final Four. And then they face planted.
And that one happened.
Yeah. So, you know, just saying, you know, things like this have happened before.
I think this Iowa team is just deceptively dangerous, though, because you have what you have is a ball dominant, larger human, like a three in the NBA in Keegan Murray, who can step outside and make a shot. He can get separation, make a shot, or he can go down low. But you surround that person with a bunch of shooters.
Yeah.
I would not want to play Iowa. I didn't want to play Iowa. I was rooting for Rutgers so hard in the Big Ten tournament because I think that, you know, Iowa can score in a hurry. They're Providence's worst nightmare. If I'm Kansas, I'm looking at this going, oh my God, they're just going to pull up and just jack threes all the time. And if they catch fire, I mean, it's hard to guard.
And we saw that today in the final, because I believe in the first half, Iowa was 3 for 15 from three or something like that, but they were still leading because Keegan Murray has enough other ways to score that even when the shooters are in a dry spell, he can usually keep them in the game. There were a few points earlier this season, mostly when he had foul trouble. Those were the games where Iowa was out of it quickly and couldn't recover, because when he's off the floor for an extended period, they are a vastly inferior team. Of course, he's an All-American, you know, wooden candidate. But over the course of the season, their shooters have certainly become warmer down the stretch. Bohannon, as we mentioned, has gotten himself together. They've gotten more contributions from Peyton Sanford, the only freshman who really plays. The McCaffreys are shooting better than they have been the last year or two. So, yeah, it's very much a team where if they're hitting their shots, they can beat anybody. And not just beat anybody, but run them out of the gym, because they have Keegan Murray and then an array of shooters. And a lot of those guys can do things other than shoot. Bohannon and Sanford are pretty much just shooters, but the McCaffreys do have a little bit of slashing ability to them as well. So when everything is clicking, Iowa's a very dangerous team, still very suspect defensively. But they've gotten a little better in that front and that front too.
You know, I want to bring up something else that we've missed in the Big Ten tournament, because you mentioned Connor McCaffrey. Connor McCaffrey got tossed against Rutgers, and Rutgers' strength coach also got tossed from the basketball game. He got two technicals and was ejected. I have never seen that happen before.
That's it. Hey, man, only Jersey, right? It's a Jersey thing, as they say. So that will bring us to the end of the Midwest region. We pivot now to the East. And fortunately, we have a Hoosier State native to lead the discussion of this region. Therefore, we will kick to Buff Komodo, where we have Purdue present here as the three, and also Indiana present in the play-in game against Wyoming in a 12 matchup.
Oh, yeah. Just happy to be here, really. I'll start with Purdue because I think that Purdue is I don't hate Purdue's draw. I know Boiler Up 89 didn't like it. But I think Purdue's in a really good spot to get to the Sweet 16. I'm not one of these people that's so in love with Chris Beard that I'm like, oh my God, Chris Beard, Texas, we're going to lose. I'd be much more fearful of playing Virginia Tech right now, honestly.
Possibly. I think their objection there is that they've had to deal with Chris Beard a couple times in the recent past, and it's not gone well as a matchup for Painter. So I understand them not wanting that. You know, for example, several years ago, Virginia played Michigan State in like the first weekend 2 years in a row, and we knocked. They were, I think they were seeded over us both times, or maybe it was 1-1. But they had to play us twice, and that was still when that was before the last several years of tournament results. So I understand not wanting to run into a coach who has knocked you out of the tournament again in the not too distant future after that. But I'm sorry. Go ahead. Continue.
Yeah. No. And then. Up at the 12 play-in game, which I will be reporting live from Dayton on Tuesday, Indiana gets to play Wyoming before they have to go out west and play St. Mary's. So a lot of the Indiana media are actually not media, but a lot of the fans are pretty upset that Indiana got the play-in game, that Michigan is the 11th seed because we just beat Michigan and all this other stuff. My retort to that is that Indiana was 9-11 in conference play.
Right.
And I get it.
So. Yeah. And it's, again, like it, compared to the resume of, again, for example, a Texas A&M, it's, I don't think you want to be looking to gift horse in the mouth too much. And again, given that the play-in game is, what is Dayton, like an hour and a half, 2 hour bus ride from Indiana or from Bloomington versus how Wyoming has to travel for it, I think it works out about as well as it could.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think that they're in a good spot because it's going to be an Indiana favorite crowd. That's just how it's going to draw out. It's going to be a pseudo home game for those guys to go play St. Mary's. St. Mary's is a deadly team each year. You know, I think they've already knocked off Gonzaga this year.
And you know, if there were a Purdue fan on this broadcast right now, he'd probably point out that you could expect some support from the Notre Dame folks coming out for their play-in game at the same site. So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So have you gone much into the X's and O's of the Wyoming aspect yet, or is that something you're still going to be looking ahead to?
That's something I look ahead to, but I don't know that the X's and O's necessarily matter at this point because Indiana is who they are. The only change that they've made is the last three or four games. Basically, since the Rutgers loss, they've been setting Trace Jackson Davis with a high ball screen a lot more and having XJ come off of it. And that's been way more productive than just this three around two. Let's throw it in. Let Trace go. Leroy Jenkins at the rim. I think that as they've found themselves, this is the best basketball that they've played all season. And not to be too cliche, but if you're going to do it, this is the time to play that ball. And I think that they come in able to compete with anybody. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to beat St. Mary's, or if they beat St. Mary's, beat UCLA and end up in a Sweet 16, but I'm not going to say it's not a favorable position to be in coming in as an underdog in the 4-5 game.
Yeah. And then if you were to make a little bit of a deeper run, Baylor is lurking, but they have also had injuries. Probably
they've had big injury problems. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably the most vulnerable of the one seeds at this point in the season. And so then, as we mentioned, so Purdue, first round, they have Yale. Should not be too much of a problem. I would think Purdue's size would allow them to control the day there. But then, I mean, second round, whether it's Texas or Virginia Tech, that is a tough round of 32 matchup. And then the two, probably the strongest two, depending on your opinion of Auburn, Purdue would most likely see Kentucky in the Sweet 16. Before dealing with the top of the bracket. So plenty of tough matchups for Purdue, kind of a difficult row to hoe, but again, I think they ended up being the lowest seeded three. So that's kind of what you expect. You're going to have most likely the toughest range.
All season Purdue has been anointed as a top 10, top five team. And really the entire season, they failed to live up to it. So,
most,
you know,
of the season, if, yeah.
If they're gonna do it, now's the time. They're built to do it. They've just not done it, and it's unfortunate because this may be their most talented team that they've ever had.
You know, the thing is, if they get past Yale, which you know it will be some funny mismatches, then both of the teams are going to wear some form of orange, so they can just pretend they're Illinois and they'll show up shooting their best. Because that team, that top 10 Purdue team showed up for us.
All right. So that'll take us quickly through kind of the first round matchups. We'll reconvene here. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it goes for the Big Ten and whether there are enough teams left to talk about. Or, hey, maybe it'll be more in the form of a postmortem and we'll be picking through a pile of bodies.
Can I just say it's absolute horse shit that they make 16 seeds play in play-in games?
Oh, yeah.
I agree completely.
Because they're pretty much all conference champions.
Yeah.
No, I think the play-in games should be exclusively for at-large teams. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, because they got two of them, and it's like you win the conference tournament, your reward is you get to go to the NCAA tournament, and instead, no, one of them's got to go, you know, to Dayton to not even get the honor of getting beaten down by a one seed.
Yeah. Yeah. To not have everybody maybe keep, like, if you're able to play with them for 8 minutes, have everyone go, flip over that and watch this team for a second.
The tournament is unfair enough as it is.
Yeah. To play Wright State at home too. That's interesting. It's a cool little wrinkle.
All right. So we'll conclude.
Is that shit actually at the Nutter Center?
No, it'll be at Dayton, but that's like,
okay. That's, yeah. Wright State is in Dayton.
Yeah. So we'll wrap up here with a quick final four projection. We'll just go around quick. Thumpasaurus, give us your four teams and your national champion.
Ooh, man. I'm thinking Gonzaga, Kentucky, Kansas, and Arizona. I'm seeing a lot of chalk.
Okay. Buff Komodo, what do you say?
Give me Gonzaga, Tennessee, Auburn, and Kentucky, and then I'll go ahead and take Gonzaga, the number one overall.
Okay. My final four pick, I have Texas Tech, Kentucky, Villanova, and Kansas. Kansas prevailing over Texas Tech in the title game. So we'll see how spectacularly wrong we all are. The good news is we put mostly loathable teams, a lot of mentions of Kansas and Kentucky in there. So us picking them, as we've established with my personal track record in particular, is the kiss of death.
No. Auburn. Auburn's winning it all.
Indeed. So that concludes our Big Ten tournament recap and Big Dance bracket preview. We hope you've enjoyed this. And again, remember to tune in the future for more of the Block the Charge cast.
Your source for Big Ten talk, it's Off Tackle Empire.